Good morning. Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. This morning's Daf HaShavuot is sponsored by Chani and Jerry Zatz, in memory, if I'm correct, where is Jerry? Of Chani's mother. Of Alta Chava Malta, but Rav Avram Yosef, Rebetzin Alta Schmidman, Nisham Shadhav and Aliyah. I wish you Chaim Haruchim. I'll be as a go.
We didn't speak about maybe a blessing to your memory.
That's true. We'll come to. Yes, we're soliciting whoever would like to sponsor breakfast or the Daf HaShavuot is more than welcome. So I apologize about the late start today. We're going to breeze through, no pun intended, as you'll see. We will breeze through this coming Daf. There is a pun intended, as you'll see. So where are we up to? We're up to our third Daf. It happens to be Daf Dalet, Bet Gimel, now Dalet. And we are probably, not definitely, but probably going to finish reflections on the first Mishnah today and head into a new Mishnah next time. But I realize I didn't print the last four lines or the first four lines of the next Daf, which would take us to the next Mishnah. So I may do it outside, while we may just save that for next time. So we begin today's Daf with a concluding set of reflections on the opening part of the first Mishnah. So to get things straight, the first Mishnah was a very straightforward three opinions. And what was the basic question of the first Mishnah? Anybody remember? Me'imatai mazkirin gvorot gashamim. Basic question is, when do we start Mashiv HaRuach? That's the opening question. Three opinions. Rabbi Elazar's opinion is you start on day one of Sukkot. Rabbi Yeshua's opinion is you start on day eight of Sukkot. And Rabbi Yehuda's opinion was you start on day eight, but a bit more granular, you start at Musaf. And you don't start at Shacharis. And there was complications. We suggested why you don't start at Shacharis, why you don't start at Maariv if it's about the eighth day. We left that to the first time. And there's been a number of reflections on where does Rabbi Elazar get his opinion from, that you start on the first day. We said, is it from Lulav? Is it Nisuch HaMayim? That led us through a brighter, which took us through a number of views on where Nisuch HaMayim begins. We had Rabbi Akiva's, Rabbi Yud Ben Batera's view about starting on the second day or the sixth day. We then had a Halach L'Moshe Mitzinai that says you do Nisuch HaMayim all 7 days, and that's got nothing to do with Mashiv HaRuach Merid HaGeshem. We noted some other Halach L'Moshe Mitzinai's 10 plantings within a certain distance means that Erev Shviit, you can carry on working all the way up to Shemitah year begins. And then we had some meteorological reflections on rain, on clouds, on dew. Do they ever stop? And we noted that in theory, of course, these things can stop. But when the Gemara says, Loma Atzrin, they are never withheld, it essentially means that it's out of God's providential tool of disciplinary measures. If these things stop, wind, clouds, and dew, that's not a signal from God. And they're not entertaining the possibility that they ever stop. We're obviously living in a different age when weather feels a lot more temperamental. But the sages are suggesting, because when they say, how do I know that dew never stops? What answer do they not give? Look out the window. See, it never stops. They don't say that. They look at Psukim and say, see, God says he'll never stop it. So they're clearly intimating that these things, we're speaking through the lens of providence, will never be stopped by God. Of course, presumably it's within our power to inhale. We've got some sheets at the front here. So we continue today with some meteorological reflections on the importance of clouds, rain, even snow, written by someone from Chicago, obviously. And then we'll head into some agadata about what it means to be a scholar. And then it sounds very odd. It doesn't even sound like stream of consciousness. But if we remember that the theme of this parak, at least opening, is what kind of power do we have to compel God? When we say Mashiv Ruach HaGeshem, we're essentially saying, we want rain to fall. How do you do that? Well, you say these words. And that leads to a tension of, can we compel God? Are there ways in which we shouldn't try to compel God? And are there practices that maybe we should avoid? And we'll get to places where there were unwarranted compulsions, where judges in Jewish history tried to compel God to do something and used improper means to do so. We'll come across the case of Yiftach. Some of you may be familiar with Jephthah and what he did or did not do to his daughter. We'll head through those, and then we'll try to resolve some questions around the middle of the Mishnah, the end of the Mishnah, and then we'll be done with the first Mishnah. So Gimel Amud Bet, in the pink on the sheets. I tried very hard to split it up by color again. And then Miriam told me that there's an online program. I'm sure some of you are familiar with Safaria. Anyone familiar with Safaria? So there's also a program called Merkava, which I'd not heard of before. And if you go on, it's Merkava. They have an online version of the Talmud where it actually highlights, tells you which part of the Gemara is a question, which part's an answer, which part's a proof, and it highlights in different colors, but you can't make a PDF out of it and print it off. So I still had to highlight it myself, but you should feel free to have a look at that on your own. So we're in the pink. We've reflected on wind and rain, so the Gemara continues. Tana, there was a brighter Torah. Ta'avim v'haruchot shniot lamatar. The clouds and winds are only second to rain, meaning rain is obviously the most beneficial thing that we can experience on earth, but wind and clouds are good too. So this was obviously written by a Brit. Heikidami, so what do you mean that wind and clouds are good? Ama Ula, Ula, and Ula's name is going to be important for Adaf. He's going to come up a number of times. Ullah says, V'idme Rabbi Yehuda, and some people say it's Rabbi Yehuda, who says, Debata Mitra, when are clouds and rain and wind good? After it's rain. So if it's rain, then having clouds in the sky or wind blow to disperse the effects of the rain, that's a good thing. Lameima Dama Aliyutahu, are you telling me it's good to have wind and clouds after rain? Answer being, yes, I just said that. He says, you really mean that? V'aktiv, but there's a verse that says, Yitin Hashem et matar arzicha avak va'afar. There is a curse in Kitavo that we say is part of the Tochacha, where God said, Yitin Hashem, God will give you rain to your land with dust and ashes. So that doesn't sound good. And not only does it not sound good, but it is Ula, Amar Ula v'itmei Rav Yehuda. It is the same person who just said that wind after rain is good. He says, oh, when is rain bad? Zika debata mitra, when there's wind after rain. So now we've got the same person, Ullah, saying, wind is good after rain and wind is a curse after rain. Again, all based on a pasuk. Lo kasha, there's no problem, no contradiction. Hadata nicha, hadata racha. That's when there's gentle rain, it's good. When there's gentle wind, it's good, because that disperses gently the effects of the rain and the nutrients, that's good. But if it's a kind of stormy wind, that's obviously a curse, and that destroys the effects that the rain might have on your crops. Or, hadamalya avak, hadalamalya avak, oh, that's one that raises dust, and one that doesn't raise dust. That's the difference. Okay. Another reflection. Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda says, zika debata mitra kamitra, wind after rain is just as good as rain. Eva debata mitra kamitra, and clouds after rain are just as good as rain. Shimsa debata mitra, but sun after rain, boy, kitre mitra, that's like two rainfalls. So if it rains, and then you've got sunlight pouring through, it does wonders. And again, if this feels archaic, or it feels agricultural and so detached from us, you would not be alone in feeling that. And over the last 300 years, there are all sorts of Hasidic commentaries that say, oh, this is all metaphorical when it's talking about sun after rain. It's not talking about physical rain followed by sunlight. It's talking about some intellectual endeavor that is followed by brightness and enlightenment. And if that sounds like it's a stretch, and really the sages did live in nature, they were surrounded by rain, they were contending with issues of agriculture, we'll see that the sages were open to metaphorizing as well and seeing this as metaphor, because that's exactly where the stream of consciousness is going to flow. So we've now said, wind after rain is good. Clouds after rain is good. Sun after rain, fantastic. Le ma'ute mai. So what is not good? Le ma'ute gilei delalia. The glowing lights at night. So I don't know where this is. The northern lights. What are they called? Aurora Bora. Yes, that one. Indeed. We'll call them northern lights. That's what Philip Pullman calls them. Right, or it could be lightning, that's also good. So these glow at night, that is not good. So if it rains, then you've got these flashes at night, that is not helpful. V'shimsha de beni karche, and sun between the bald patches, which I confess is not good. In fact, that's why I've purchased a hat, so I don't get burnt on the head. This is not talking about bald patches, it's talking about holes in the clouds. If there's rain, and the clouds remain, and there's kind of sun pouring between the clouds, that's not good, that's not helpful, it's too diffused. Is a suggestion. Amar Rava. And now we're going to have Rava leading through a number of statements that go from meteorology to pedagogy. So Amar Rava. Rava says, Malye Talga, Leture, Kachamish Matre La'ara. Talga, anyone know what Talga is? If you think in Aramaic, sometimes Taf and Shin replace each other.
Snow,
there you go. So snow is good, Leture, for the mountains, Kachamish Matre La'ara, five times as good as rain is for the ground. Shneemar, and again, if you're reading this metaphorically, what are you going to say? What are the mountains? Maybe you say those are the scholars. And snow being cold, being frozen, being frigid is good for them, even if being like rain, being a bit more gentle, is good for those who are common. Again, if that sounds like a pushed reading, we're going to come right into Rava speaking about how scholars should behave based on meteorological metaphors. But that's where we are at the moment. The snow is good for mountains, rain is good for the land. How do we know? Shneimar, there's a pasuk that says, Ki l'sheleg yomar, that to the snow he will say, God, hu la'aretz, you are going to the land, and geshem matar v'geshem matrat uzo, and rainfall, and the rainfall of power. And in the pasuk, it sounds like rain is mentioned five times. Geshem is one, matar two, geshem is three, and matrot is two itself, because it's plural. So you've got five mentions of rain compared to snow. Va'amar Rava, Rava continues, talga l'ture, matra razia le'ilane, snow is good for the mountains, strong rain is good for the trees, matra nicha l'peire, soft rain is good for the fruits. Urfila, and Urfila, which is the most gentle rain imaginable. Afila lepartside de tute kala mahanyale. It is good for seeds that are right beneath the clod of the earth. So if you think you have a little seed beneath the earth, rain actually might not be good for that. It's going to knock it out. It's going to move it around. So strong rain is better. But if you've got a gentle rainfall, a gentle mist, that is good for the seed. And the Gemara says, my Urfila, what is this Urfila? If you didn't know what that word was, you're not alone. The Gemara says, what is it? Uru fili, it means awaken in the furrows. So it's a compound word that speaks about kind of gentle rain that moves slowly through the soil and doesn't disturb the seeds. So there's often, they say about Eskimos, which is probably not a politically correct term anymore, indigenous members of Alaska, they say that they've got 50 different words for snow because it's so important to them, they're different kinds. So here you've got 400 different terms. For rain, Urfila, you've got Nicha, Razia, different kinds of rain. Now, we head into the yellow, because now, between now, the second line, and the bottom of the beige at the bottom, we're going to have a number of agadic reflections, legendary reflections, that connect to providence and to meteorology. Amar Rava. So, if you look in the art scroll will say, why are we citing this quote? Because it's a statement by Rava, and it connects small to the fact that Rava's speaking. Amar Rava, Rava says, Hait Tsuba Marabana, this budding young scholar, Dami Lapartsida de Tute Kala, is similar to that seed right beneath the clod of earth. So that which Rava just mentioned, the seed beneath the clod of earth, that is what a budding scholar is like, Dikim de Nava Nava, because once they sprout, they're done. They sprout and keep going. So, and it, you know, when little kids come home from nursery and they all get excited, they plant those little seeds and then they shoot out and then it kind of goes crazy. So that is the comparison to a young scholar, that when they're studying, they kind of, the assumption is it takes a lot of time, you have to be very gentle, and they're saying we have to be gentle with this seed, but once they have started to germinate, it's just going to shoot up and nothing you can do to stop it. Va'amar Rava, and Rava also happens to note, Haitzubim Rabbanan de Ratach, if you see a young scholar who is, what is Ratach, anybody know? Ratach also comes up in the realm of Kashrut as a discussion. Reticha means to boil. So if you see a young scholar that is boiling, doesn't mean hot, but is full of rage, or writer who dekar marat chale, it is the Torah that is making them full of rage. How do we know? Shnei emar halo ko divrei ka'esh no mashem. It's a verse from Jeremiah that says the word of God is like fire. So here there seems to be, the Oscar will say it's just an observation by Rava about scholars, but it does connect again to this notion about what does it mean to lead? What does it mean to observe in the world? And here we're saying that scholars are angry. And if you see that as a flaw in character, the suggestion actually that scholars should be angry, that God wants us to be angry and not to write everything off as just providence. And this could lead to a long discussion in the thought of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks and Rabbi Soloveitchik into the question we actually dealt with in our Elul series, which was good happening to bad people, bad happening to good people. Our role is everything providence. Are we meant to accept the world? And here the suggestion that scholars actually should be angry. And don't write that off as a bad temperament. It's actually the Torah that is leading them to be angry. You should be angry with the state of the world so that we can heal it. And this, again, connects to the question of providence. Is everything just God doing it and I need to accept? And so far we've explored the possibility that actually not everything is intended to be providence. There are natural parts of the world, whether it is the fall of dew or the blow of wind or the presence of clouds or the state of humanity, perhaps, that leads scholars to be angry. You shouldn't write it off as bad form. Vam Ravashi, Ravashi then continues, Kol Tamin Chacham Sheinu Kasha Kabarzal, any scholar that is not as hard as iron. Einu Talmid Chacham is not a scholar, and this has often been used to defend uncompromising stances among scholars. Say, I've got to be hard as Barzan. And in fact, the Rav Moshe Feinstein's Shuvot, the Igrit Moshe, he was often asked halachic questions, which usually pertain to halachic issues. But there is a shaila that was written to him. What does the Gemara mean when it says Talmid Chacham should be kasha kabarzel? And he's got a long response to that, which you should feel free to explore. So that's the view here of Rav Ashi. You have to be as hard as iron. But of course, where does this come from? We have to tie this to a pasuk because it says Shneema ukapati shifot set sela, like a hammer that smashes rock, in reference to the word of God. So here the sage has to be like a hammer that smashes a rock, which is, if you were to characterize this metaphor, it sounds aggressive. It is about breaking things apart. And here the response from Rabbi Abba is, Rabbi Abba says, Rav Ashi, to Rav Ashi, who just said that, Atun mehatam matnita lehu, you learn it from there, from that pasuk, Anun mehakam matninana, but we learn it from a different pasuk that a sage has to be as hard as iron. Dichtiv, it says in the verse, Eretz Asher Avaneha Barzel, speaks about the land of Israel as a place which Avaneha, which translates as its stones or its rocks, are Barzel, iron. Now, are rocks iron? You can find iron ore in rock, but not ordinarily. So there's a kind of a flexibility to give some homiletic reading. Al tikre avaneha, don't read it as its stones, ela boneha, but its builders. Now that may sound familiar to you from another drush that we say often on Friday night and Shabbat morning. Al tikre banayach, ela bonayach, don't say children but builders. This is not children build, this is stones. Avaneha, but read it boneha. And since we say the stones of Israel are iron, the suggestion is the builders of Israel should be iron. Now, is that just a technical debate about, oh, that's an interesting thought about sages. You learned it from one pasuk, I learned it from another. Let's all get together. They seem to me to be coming from very different perspectives on what it means to be hard and severe. One is you should be like a hammer that smashes rock. And one is you should be like a builder that supports everything else. Those are two very different visions of what it means to be uncompromising. Are you uncompromising in an effort to break things down that are problematic, or are you uncompromising in a spirit to hold things up that are worthy? Those are two different attitudes, and the Gemara includes them both to suggest that a sage ought to know when to embody a productive energy and when to break things apart as well. Amar Ravina, and Ravina jumps in, lest we get carried away and become too radical. Ravina says, Afilo achi, even though you're right, we've got these psukim that speak about severity, a person should train themselves to be gentle, to be soft, to not be uncompromising. Shneamar, as it says in a different pasuk, v'haser kas milibach, you should remove anger from your heart. Full stop, end of Rava's reflections on what it means to be a sage, connecting it back to the seed that grows beneath the ground that needs gentle rain. So now we continue into the, really this is just a flowing of Agadata, but I put some darker yellow here to just distinguish the passage. So Amram Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amram Rabbi Yochanan. Shmuel bar Nachmani says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan is going to be key for us too. He's going to come up a number of times. Shlosha she'elu shaloka hogan. There were three people in Jewish history who asked inappropriately. You look great. Keep doing that.
Number four.
Say again.
Number four.
Oh, you're number four. Actually, Tosfot says there's a number four, Michael Schreiber. Why isn't he mentioned? It actually doesn't mention Michael Schreiber. It mentions Kalev as being number four. We could talk about that differently. But there were three people who asked inappropriately, and what happened to them? And towards the end of the Shnei Meshivu Kahogan, two of them were answered appropriately, one was not. So again, this is in the dynamics of providence. You cannot just assume, oh, if praying makes God do things, I can make God do things. We don't have magical influence over God. This is what's called theurgy, which sounds literally urging theo, God, to do things. And in the ancient world, there were theurgic practices, which mean if I perform a certain ritual, a certain rite, it's guaranteed to work. And we're plagued by this in not just contemporary Judaism, but the history of Judaism as well, where there are beliefs that grow out that if I do a certain thing, if I stand a certain way, if I behave in a certain, if I wake up at a certain time, or I say a certain word, I'm guaranteed to have a solution. And here the Gemara is pushing back. Yes, we pray for rain, but we recognize that it doesn't compel God to do anything. We're asking, we are begging at times, but we can't force anything. And there were three times where somebody tried to force God to do something. Twice it worked out, once it didn't, with catastrophic consequences. So who are these three? Elohen, these are them. The first word on the line is Eliezer. First one who's coming up in 2 weeks' time on the parasha, Eliezer Ed of Avraham. The first person who acted inappropriately, it sounds like, is the servant of Avraham, Eliezer. The second, Shaul ben Kish, the first king of Israel, King Saul. And the third is Yiftach HaGiladi, Jephthah the Giladite, who all three of them basically set up a deal with God and said, God, if you do what I say, the first thing that happens, I'll do. And sometimes it doesn't work so well. So let's see what they are. Eliezer ben Avraham, what did Eliezer do? So what did Eliezer, what deal did he make with God? Anyone familiar? He basically said, I'm standing here, whoever comes out and gives me water and offers it to the camels too, that's Yitzhak's wife. Meantime, Yitzhak's going, wait, you don't know who's going to come out. And that's what the Gemara said. Eved Avram, what is it? Dichtiv, it says in the pasuk, Vaya narashe omar la hatina kadech. Whoever comes out to me, a young woman, offers me to drink and gives to the camels too. The Gemara says, Yachol afilu chigeret afilu suma. So a lame person could have come out, a blind person could have come out, which is not to say that these are insignificant people, but to say, if you're trying to start a progeny of a nation, yes, I see a couple of eyebrows, I was trying to look for metaphorical reading. Yeah, you'd get in trouble for this today. And there are other readings of it metaphorical, but the plain reading is, the Gemara is saying, if you're setting up a national progeny, you want somebody who is going to be able to support that effort. Not somebody who's going to need overwhelming support. And here you've got somebody setting up saying, I want whoever's going to come and offer me. So what you could do, you can now strap up Yitzchak to a life of commitment to a needing wife, a needing spouse, as opposed to both of them being a team to build the future. I hope that worked a little bit. Heshiva Kohogan, and he was responded to well. V'nizam not Rivka, and what happened? Rivka came out, so it worked out. Shaul ben Kish, what happened with Shaul? This is when Goliath is standing against the troops and he's about to wipe them all out and he's saying, you're all going to die, your God is ridiculous. At that point, Shaul says, we're in big trouble. The morale is plummeting. We're about to lose. Our nation is teetering on the edge. And Vahayah ish ashe yokenu yasrenu amelech osho galve bitoyten lo. And then he says, whoever strikes down Goliath, they will have free taxes, lots of money, and why not, I'll throw it in, and you can marry my daughter. At which point someone says, you've just given the royal princess, whoever beats Goliath. And who tends to win in war against big ogres? Yeah, equally big ogres. They tends to be not pleasant people who are kind of warmongers who want to fight and are vicious. Yachol afilu eved afilu mamzer. But here it says, but it could have been anybody. Could have been an eved or a mamzer. And here again, this is not to say that those are unimportant people, but they are prohibited in marriage. An eved or a mamzer to a regular, I don't know, regular, an unproblematic state of a Jew. Hashivuka Hogan, but it was responded well in his Zamla David, and David happened to win. So you've got so far Eliezer and Shaul who both set up with God, if you do this, this will happen, which is setting yourself up for trouble, and it's essentially saying, I trust providence, that if I say to God, whoever comes out first is going to marry Yitzchak, God's going to look out for me. And the Gemara is suggesting, That's really unwarranted confidence. And it happened to work out for you. Kohogan, God was generous to you, and it worked out. But there's one case where it didn't. Yiftach HaGiladi, the case of Yiftach Tichtiv, V'hayayotze Sheyesim Lata Beiti, this is the case of Jephthah, this is Perek Yud Aleph, the 11th chapter of Judges. Yiftach is fighting a war. He's been summoned by brothers who had expelled him in his youth for being wild and a half-brother. He comes back in as a general, and he says, I'm going to fight this war. And he turns to God and says, God, if you let me win this war, I will bring out as a sacrifice whatever meets me first when I get back to my ranch. And the Gemara says, what's the worst case scenario you could imagine? It could be Yachol Afilu Davar Tame. Maybe something impure comes up. Maybe a pig. You're going to offer a pig to God? That's the worst case scenario. And what did God do? He says, you know what? I'm going to respond improperly. Meaning, I'm going to give even worse than the worst case scenario, which is Nizdam Nalo Bito. His daughter walks out the house, and then there's an entire contentious history about what happened to his daughter. Did he sacrifice his daughter? There are views in the commentaries that he ended up sacrificing his daughter. There are views that he didn't sacrifice her, but that he cast her into a celibate existence, living on in a monastic condition on a hill somewhere. But either way, it didn't work out well. And now the Gemara responds, by the way, God doesn't want sacrifices of human beings. V'hainu dekamal anavali Israel. And this is why the prophet said to Israel, Hatsari ain begilad, isn't there no balm in Gilead? In Rofo ain sham, is there no healer there? Meaning, Yiftach, you made this oath, you're going to sacrifice your daughter. What do you do if you make an oath that you don't want to keep? What do every year when we made oaths that we don't want to keep? We annul our vows. And usually you have to find a bet din or a scholar depending on the kind of vow. And is it, sorry, ain b'Gilad, is there no balm in Gilead? Meaning is there no one there who can annul your vow? Is the assumption here the Gemara is making that verse means. Anyone know what else the balm of Gilead inspired?
Remdesivir,
indeed, made by Gilead, which is a medical company. And if you ask the founder, he says, we call it Gilead on the base of this pasuk that says, is there no balm in Gilead, no healer there? There you go. I only know that there was a news item about it last year.
You mentioned it, so I remember it.
Oh, I mentioned it?
Yes.
Oh, well, I'm glad you remember it.
You quoted this pasuk.
Is that between Minch and Maariv one night?
It was probably on Zoom.
Oh, on Zoom, so it's recorded. Okay, so maybe I remember it. Okay, great. So is there no healer in Gilead? Maybe that's why I thought of it now. Okay, good. Oktiv, and not only does God say, I don't want sacrifices, meaning you should have annulled this vow, but there is another pasuk in Jeremiah that speaks about child sacrifice, where God responds in a trifold manner. He says, about sacrifices, Asher lo tziviti, I never commanded them, lo dibarti, I never spoke about them, lo anta libi, I didn't even conceive of the possibility. Now that sounds rhetorically effective, but if we, I have to apologize for this, if we cast our minds back to Malbim, and the troubles of repetition. God is here turning around. I should have just said, I don't want child sacrifice. But to say, I never commanded it, I never thought of it, I never said it, it sounds rhetorically effective, but biblically problematic. God doesn't need to repeat himself. So the Gemara says, actually, there are three different cases God is referring to when he says, I don't want child sacrifice. One is, Ashelo Tziviti, that God says, I didn't command it. Zebeno Shal Misha Melech Moab. This is the firstborn son, Misha, the firstborn son of Misha, the king of Moab, and this is a story in Kings, a very strange story, where the king of Moab sacrifices his son so that he can win a war against Israel, which he doesn't, but he does sacrifice his son. It doesn't work out. Shnei Mars, it says, he takes not just his son, but his heir to the throne, and he kills him. As a sacrifice. And God says, I don't want that. Why do people keep sacrificing their children to me? I never spoke about it. I never told Yiftach to do it. And obviously the most contentious case where it seems most obvious that God did want a child sacrifice, which is coming up, the Arkada coming up in this week's Parsha. And here he says, and I never conceived of it. Yitzchak ben Avraham. God never wanted Yitzchak to be sacrificed. And there are all sorts of readings about this. What did God mean when he said to Avraham, go and take it up as a sacrifice? Maybe he didn't mean Yitzchak. Maybe he meant something else. There's all sorts of readings. But it's clear that from the end of the story, at the very least, God never wanted Avraham to kill his son. And again, this sounds like we've got so far off piece. We're trying to figure out when you say Mashiach Aruch Merid HaGeshem. We're talking about the Arkada and Yiftach. But this is all kind of a flow on the theme in the Bet Midrash as they're speaking. About how can we affect providence, what does prayer do, what ought we pray for, what ought we not to do in our bid to compel God to do things. And now the Gemara suggests in this kind of beige part that maybe when it comes to national efforts, we can be a little more compelling in our theurgy. We can be a little more insistent on the way we speak. Amar Barachia, Barachia says, or at least let's not say that, God is a little more generous when it comes to national efforts. Barachia says, Av Knesset Israel Sheilach Shalom Kahogan. Even the Jewish people as a whole asked a question that was improper, V'Kadosh Baruch Hu Hashiva Kahogan, but God responded generously. Shnei Amar, as it says in a verse, V'Neida'ah, the Jewish people speaking about God said, Neida'ah, we will know, Nir Defala Dadad Hashem, let us eagerly know God, K'shachar Nachon Motza, oh, his emergence is as sure as the dawn, the Avo Kageshem Lanu, and he comes to us like rain. Now, is rain a good thing? Oh, excellent. It depends sometimes. We're praying for rain, but we've also noted over the last Amud that there are times where rain isn't good. If it's too hard, if it's followed by wind, all sorts of times where rain isn't good. So they say, God should come to us like rain. In theory, if God was in a bad mood and he wanted to hold us to our word, he could have said, oh, you want me to come like rain? I'll come like hard rain. Or I'll come like rain followed by wind. So in theory, that's a dangerous proposition. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so God responds to the Jewish people, Biti, my daughter, You ask for something that sometimes is desirable and sometimes is not. I'll come to you like something that is always desirable. As God says later, actually, in a different book, I will be like dew to the people of Israel. And dew is always desirable. There is no damage ever done by dew. It's never withheld. It's seen as a permanent positive. So God responds positively. Even when Jews make a request and say, come to us like rain, God could have said, oh, that's what you're going to pray for? And the suggestion here is, again, that theurgy is not an automatic mechanism where you say something and it happens like a slot machine. God is a conscious, self-aware being that makes decisions about whether to respond and how to respond. So this is about inducing humility in us as we speak about prayer affecting our life. There's another time where the Jewish people asked improperly. They said to God, put me as a seal on your heart, as a seal on your arm. Now, if you want to be a seal, you want the world to see that I am associated with God. Now, if I say I want to be on your heart, in theory, that could be a metaphor. I always want to be in your mind. But it could also say, if I say, I want to be a seal on your heart, you say, okay, so I'll put a little seal under my shirt. You're on my heart, but no one gets to see it. So God responds, you ask for something which is sometimes seen and sometimes not. I'm going to make you a seal that the whole world would always see. I will engrave you on my palm. So again, we seem to be very far away from our initial question, but I think it does connect thematically through. Excuse me. So it's individuals who wrote it, but they are speaking for the people, meaning Shir Shirim is seen as a dynamic between the Jews and God. So you're right, but it is evoked by a single person in name of a nation. Okay, we're now back. That's the end of the Agadic material today. And now we're back to dealing with the Mishnah. Now, the Mishnah, I know it's been the challenge with Daf HaShavua is it's been 2 weeks since we saw the Mishnah. But in the Mishnah, we had the two views first. Rabbi Elazar says you start Mishnah Baruch on day one. Rabbi Shua says you started on day eight. And then they have a back and forth about, well, how can you mention it if it's a time of curses? I'm not saying you should pray for it. I'm just saying you should mention it, full stop. And then the Mishnah had this stray sentence where it just says, we do not ask for rain apart from when it's the rainy season. And at the time we said, I'm not sure what that means. Excuse me. But we'll said, we'll leave it because the Gemara is going to discuss it now. Now, we were talking about, what is Mashiv HaRuach called? It's called Haskarat Geshamim. You're not asking for rain. What is Sheilat Geshamim? When are you asking for rain in davening? Say again?
In the beginning.
No, so we don't ask at the beginning. Mashiv HaRuach, that's mentioning. Haskarat Geshamim. V'tein Talamatar in Berachat Hashanim, that is when we are requesting. So the Mishnah says, we only request rain when it's not the rainy season. But the Mishnah is talking about Haskarat Geshamim, so it's a confusion. So Savruah, so the Gemara says, the assumption is, Sheilava Haskaracha Demiltehi, that asking and mentioning are the same thing. Meaning they have to happen at the same time. In theory, the Gemara is assuming, when I say Mashiv HaRuach Medageshem, what do I have to start saying at the same time? Tent Alamata. Is that what we do?
No.
But that is going to be the overwhelming assumption of the next daf, that we really shouldn't segregate these two things. When you mention something, you should also pray for it. That just seems to be the appropriate gesture. So who is it? Man Tana. Who is the Tana? Now think about those three views. When do we start Mashiv HaRuach? And if we say She'ilah has to be not or only in the rainy season, not when it's not a rain time. So that sounds like you should start asking for it. When does She'ilah begin if it's got to be rainy season?
December 5th.
So that would be a good suggestion. When could it not be starting, let's say? First day Sukkot, it definitely can't start because we say it's a curse over Sukkot. So whose view is it probably then? Well, who says you start on first day Sukkot? Rabbi Elazar, so it can't be him. So it's got to be Rabbi Yeshua, we're assuming. Or Rabbi Yehuda, who's at the end of the Mishnah. So who is it? Man Tana, penultimate line. Who is the view that says, you ask at the end, Amar Rava, Rabbi Yeshua, is Rabbi Yeshua, Dama Mashad Han Chato, it says when you put the Lulav down, meaning on the eighth day, that's when you start saying Mashiv HaRuach. Amalei Abaya, Abaya suggests this radical notion that we're going to have drawn out through the next Amud, which is, Afilu Tem Rabbi Elazar. You could say it's Rabbi Elazar who says you start saying Mashiv HaRuach on day one, because Sheila Lachud Vahaskara Lachud. Maybe mentioning it is on day one of Sukkot, but actually you start requesting it later. Which would be either December 5th or maybe earlier than that, and we'll have to come to that after the next Mishnah. Ve'igad da'amre, and this is where you've got an unusual moment where the Gemara will essentially repeat the exact same thing, but just in a different name, to suggest that some people have it reported differently. Igad da'amre, some people say that it was read this way. Lema Rabbi Yeshua, it should be the Rabbi Yeshua, Dama Mishadach Hamto, so if you put it down on the eighth day, that's when you start saying Mishavaroch, that's when you start saying Tentel Mata, Amarava, and it's Rava, not Abai, who says, Afilu term Belazi, you can say it's Rav Elazar, Sheilachud, Vazker, Lachud, that asking and mentioning are two different things and happen at different times. Full stop, end of section. Now, the very end of the Mishnah was a verb of Yehuda, which we're now going to address. And there are essentially, as you can see, two main parts are going to follow, which are dealing with contradictions, firstly in Rabbi Yehuda, and then there's going to be a question of halacha l'maisa, what do we do practically? And there are going to be four resolutions to each of those contradictions we'll come to. And I've tried to highlight some of the names in this next section, though I do acknowledge, even from... I assume my eyesight is okay, and it's a little hard to look at this section, so you'll have to forgive me for this, but Harvey will do consultations at the end for anybody who needs. So, again, the last view in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said, we start saying Mashiv HaRoch Medageshem when? When do we do it?
Eighth day
at Musaf. And part of the early Mishnah, he intimated not only when it starts, but when it finishes. And he says it starts at Musaf on the first day of Sukkot, on the last day of Sukkot. And when does it stop? When do we stop saying Mashiv Renageshem? Shacharis at Pesach. Musaf on the first day of Pesach, we're no longer saying it. And now we're going to have a problem. Because for those of you who don't have sheets but have a Gemara, you'll see the next Mishnah on the next page is what we're about to quote, and we'll come to that in more detail. But that Mishnah says, when do we stop requesting rain, she'elah? When do we stop asking for rain? And what do we say asking for rain is? V'tein talamata. But the Gemara is assuming whenever you stop one, you stop the other. And the Gemara is about to have in that Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, when do we stop saying it? After Pesach. So we're now going to have a first Mishnah says, you stop saying Mashiv Moreh Geshem on first day Pesach at Shacharis. And the second Mishnah of the Masechet says, you stop asking for rain after Pesach. Is that a contradiction? Sounds like it. How could you solve it and say it's not a contradiction? Yeah, one is talking about Mashiv HaRuach, that stops on first day. One's talking about the Tent Olamata, that stops after Pesach. So there's a possibility that you have to stop mentioning rain on the first day of Pesach, but you keep asking for it for another week. Does that sound logical?
No.
No, so that's going to be part of what we face in the Gemara, because they're going to try and resolve these issues. Uraminhi. Anyone know what Uraminhi means, translation? Uraminu, a word that comes up a lot, it means we have a contradiction. We're now going to compare two different sources that contradict. Because we had Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah saying, you stopped Mashiv HaRuach at Shacharis at Pesach. And here is a quote. Ad matai sholin et kashamim. This is the next Mishnah. When do we stop requesting rain? Rabbi Yehuda omer ad shiavra Pesach, until Pesach transpires. What else can Pesach mean sometimes, by the way? Not just the holiday Pesach. What might Pesach mean? Korban Pesach. So maybe it means when you stop bringing the Korban Pesach. That will be an option suggested as well. For Meir, that's Rabbi Yehuda says, when Pesach transpires, that's when you stop asking. For Meir, Omer Shiava Nisan. Rameh says, no, when Nisan is finished, that's when you stop asking. And I see the time, we're going to move relatively quickly, and we may have to stop before I intended, and we'll do more next time. So Amar of Chista. Rav Chista says, there's no contradiction, no kasha, there's no contradiction between one and the other. Kan lishol, kan lahaskit. As Jay said, the first Mishnah says, when do you stop Mashiv Moreh Geshem? On the first day of Pesach. When do you stop asking? That's after Pesach. But now, and he suggests, Mishal Shal Va'azil, you keep asking until Pesach is over, but Lahazkir, but mentioning it, but Yom Tov Rishon Tzik, you stop on the first day of Pesach. Amma, Ullah. Ullah says, and you'll have to forgive this turn of phrase, Jay, Hadar of Chista, Kasha, Kachomaz, Shalayim, Kasha, Lainayim. This is as bad for the teeth as vinegar and as bad for the eyes as smoke. It makes no sense, he says. How could you possibly suggest doing this? Bama Shemakum Sheinu Shal Maske. Just as you can mention when you're not asking, meaning it's more generic to kind of mention God's reign before you start asking for it. Of course you have to mention it when you're asking. It makes no sense. I'm stopped mentioning rain, but I'm going to continue asking for it. Meaning, saying that God is the rainmaker makes sense to do before you start asking. You're going to say, God the rainmaker, God the rainmaker for a few days. And then you can do Sheila, and you can say, now that I've called you rainmaker for a while, can you please bring the rain? But it doesn't make sense to say, okay, I'm going to stop calling him the rainmaker, but I'm going to keep asking as if I've kind of put in the bank my praise. You've got to continue to press God. Prayer doesn't, again, this is on the subject of providence, not the notion that you can just meet a threshold and I'm done my requesting. It is a continual beseeching of God. So it doesn't make any sense. He says, Ella ama Ulla. Now Ulla's response is going to be, and this is response two, first we have Chista saying, well, the first mission is Mashiach Aruch, the second is Tentel Amata. We've now got Ulla that says, actually, Tre Tanai Ali B'dur Rabbi Yehuda. And this is the least preferable way out for the Gemara, because this is saying the first and second mission of Tanit have a contradiction in tradition. That Rabbi Yehuda both says you stop saying and you stop mentioning at the same time, which is going to be either on first day Pesach or on last day Pesach, but there are two traditions as to what Rabbi Yehuda said. We're not sure what Rabbi Yehuda said. They're Tre Tanai. There are two Tanaitic views, is Rabbi Yehuda's view. And not only are there two views, but they're contained in the first two Mishnayot of Tanit, which feels uncomfortable for the Gemara. So it's going to try three different routes apart from his to resolve this. But ultimately, he's going to fall back on Ulla and say all the others are so on. This idea that I can stop mentioning rain but keep requesting it is so providentially unthinkable that they're willing to say it's just got to be two traditions that we're following Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosef, well, hold on a minute. You don't need to go down that road. My Ad Shavu Pesach, what does it mean when Pesach is finished? Ad Shavu Shlich Zibarishon, HaYorubim Tavarishon Pesach. It means when you finish Shacharis on the first day Pesach. Anyone buying that? The Gemara says, I don't think so. So he says, until Pesach is done, you request rain. He says, well, what does it mean until Pesach is done? It means until Shacharis on Pesach, first day, is done. Amalei Abaya says, and he doesn't say that doesn't really cohere. That's a bit of a push. He says, Shelebe Yomdav Mi'iki asks a stronger question, which is, hold on, you're telling me, the Rebbe says, when do you stop with Tentel Matar? After Shacharis on first day Pesach. Why doesn't that work? Because we don't say the Tentel Matar on Pesach. We've got Yomtav davening. Now, when, I remember after this, when I was about 19, I guess, I'd just come back from yeshiva, and somebody in shul was like trying to catch me out, and said, when do we say the Tentel Matar on Pesach? On Yomtav. Anyone know the answer?
Don't.
Incorrect.
In
say again?
In
Tfilat Tal. We said at the end, but when does everybody say V'tein Tal Matar? On first day Pesach or second day Pesach? That's what I was trying to play with. And I said, are you talking about some like ancient practice that I know about? And the answer is something, of course, none of you know, because it's if you make a mistake. And if you say the weekday Amida on Yom Tov without thinking by mistake, and you start the bracha Birchat Hashanim, when it's Yom Tov, when it's not Musaf, in Shacharis or Minchan Maariv, you have to continue to the end of the bracha. Because technically speaking, the weekday Amida is the appropriate Amida for every day on Yom Tov too, but Chazal said Tirchat Tzibur, it's too long, so we shorten it. So this is true on Shabbos too. On Shabbos, if you start the weekday Amida, you should finish the bracha you've started. So if you start Baruch Aleinu et Hashana Hazot on Yom Tov Rishon of Chag, in theory, you should say V'tein Talam Matar, because that changes. So that was the case he had, and it so happens, I was very pleased, because it so happens I was bored in shul that Yom Tov, and I was looking through the back of the art scroll, has like halachic notes in it, and I happened to just see that the previous day, and he went, oh fine, walked off. And that was the end of that. But I remembered it for this moment. So he's saying, well, hold on a minute. Sheila ba yom tov mi'ika? We don't ask v'tein tal matar on yom tov. So how can Rabbi Yehuda say, we stop saying v'tein tal matar after Shacharis on Pesach? Unless you're making a mistake, you don't say v'tein tal matar on Pesach. He says, well, actually, amale in. He says, yes, we do say it. Shol maturgaman. The maturgaman asks for it. Meaning, the rabbi who stands up and says 45 Misha Berach also is going to say Misha Berach for rain. And you say the ten talam matar publicly, and he says the miturgan shol davishen asurach litzibah. The miturgan is going to stand up and ask for something that nobody asked for, that you don't need on that day. It's meant to stop, so that it doesn't make sense. And the mechutah kudah ulla, we're going to stop after the blow. But you follow ulla, which is there are two traditions, and that means in the first two mishnayot of Tanit there is a standing debate as to whether you, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, whether you stop on day one of Pesach or after Pesach. Last possibility, Rabbah says, my Ad Shavu Pesach, what does it mean until the end of Pesach? Ad Shavu Zman Shechitat HaPesach, until Shechitat Zvin Shechit Chila, Kein Sofa. Now, if you say, you stop asking at the end of Korban Pesach time, when does Korban Pesach finish? Before Pesach starts, Erev Pesach. So now the setup is as follows, and this is what it's going to suggest. You mention rain at the beginning of Sukkot. with Mashiach for Nagei Hashem, you start at the end of Sukkot, rather, and then you start asking in December. So you start mentioning it for a while before you ask. And now he's saying you're going to stop asking and continue mentioning it till the next day, when you have Tefillat Tal on the first day. So it's almost a nice parallel, or it's kind of symmetrical, that you mention, ask, stop asking, stop mentioning. But it does seem odd that you're going to stop asking, I don't want rain anymore, and you're going to keep calling God the rainmaker, almost as if to say, I've got in this pattern I need to finish, but I'm going to stop asking first. It's an odd dynamic, but that's what he says. Just as at the start, you mention it even though you don't ask it. You keep mentioning it even though you stopped asking. I understand that at the beginning you're going to mention it before you ask, because that's a reasonable thing to do. If I'm going to ask you for assistance, it makes sense, but before I technically ask you, I'm going to, so to speak, butter you up first. I'm going to say, oh, you're so wonderful, you're amazing, I'm going to do what I need. And then you say, now that I've said that, maybe you want to, you know, make a donation or something. That makes sense to mention praise before you ask. But if you finished asking, the conversation's over, to kind of hang around afterwards and say, oh, by the way, you're so wonderful, meaning you've done the ask, get out of there. That's something, again, I'm not a fundraiser. You can ask a professional whether that's a good idea. Maybe you should hang around a while afterwards saying how wonderful they are. But this is the suggestion. Haskara namar su shelahi. Mentioning God's praise is a form of asking. Elisofo, but at the end, if you've finished asking, meaning you don't want it anymore, you're not interested in rain. In fact, not only are you not interested, you don't want it, because it would be bad. So for Myrus Husheleka, why do you do that at all? And we have to follow Ulla and conclude that the first two Mishnayot are intention, because there's a debate about what Yehuda's view is when you stop asking and when you stop saying, which is at the same moment on either first day Pesach, which is our practice, which we'll come to when we do the next Mishnah, or at the end of Pesach, which is the view of Rabbi Yehuda in the second Mishnah. Now, I said, I don't want to hold you too long, so we're going to stop here. We should keep going. Okay, if you need to leave, you should feel free to leave. We start a little late. Forgive me. We'll get through the yellow and we'll do the beige next time. So, full stop. We now ask a question. Halacha l'maisa. Who do we follow? When do we start? And again, what is our question? Yeah, when do we start, Mashiach for Renegation? Again, we've got technically confused because we're trying to figure out the end of the Mishnah mentions when you stop. And we say, well, hold on, that doesn't square with our next Mishnah. But that was kind of a parenthetical remark on the end of our Mishnah. Now we say, full stop. The opening question was, when do you say Mashiach Renegation? What is the answer? Amr Asim Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, Halacha Rabbi Yehuda, the Halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda, which was the third view in the Mishnah, which is our practice, which is, when do you start Mashiach Renegation? Musaf on Shmini Atzeret. Rav Zera says to Rav Asi, did Rabbi Yochanan really say the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda? Just bear in mind that name. Rabbi Yochanan said, we follow the last view in the Mishnah. And now the Gemara says, well, hold on a minute. Are you sure Rabbi Yochanan thinks we follow that view? Hatnan, there was a Mishnah. And the Mishnah says, on the third of Mar Cheshvan, we start asking for rain. Rabbi Gamliel says, on the seventh of Mar Cheshvan, that's when we start asking for rain. V'ham Rabbi Elazar halacha Gamliel, and Rabbi Elazar says we follow Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel says, when do you start asking? On the seventh of Mar Cheshvan. So, are you sure Rabbi Yochanan thinks we follow Rabbi Yehuda, which is that we start on the last day of Sukkot? Because Rabbi Elazar says we follow Gamliel, who says we start on the seventh of Mar Cheshvan. Now, why is that seen as a contradiction? Rabbi Yochanan says we follow the Mishnah that we have, and Rabbi Elazar says we follow Rabbi Gamliel. So, whose views are in contradiction? Rabbi Yochanan, who says halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Elazar, who says we follow Rabbi Gamliel. So the Gemara is saying, are you sure that Rabbi Yochanan said that? Because Rabbi Elazar said that. And what is a reasonable answer to that? Machlokas is one option, meaning they're different people. What are you talking about? Rabbi Yochanan can say that, and Rabbi Elazar can say that. Technically speaking, Rabbi Elazar was a main student of Rabbi Yochanan, so the assumption might be that if he was a close student, he wouldn't disagree. But the Gemara does respond, and it's going to have four different ways to say that's not a contradiction. First, Amale Gavra Karamek. The first is, they're two different people. Don't compare two different people when you're trying to say there's a contradiction. They're entitled to disagree, number one. Number two, you could say, Lo Kasha, there's no contradiction. Kan Nishol, Kan Lahazkir. One is talking about Sheila. When do we start requesting? That's the view of Rabbi Gamliel, which is the seventh of Mar Cheshvan. But when do we start mentioning? That's still Rabbi Yehuda on Shmini Atzeret. That's a different view, quite plausible. Oh, not plausible, because I'm Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan said, "B'machem shishal mazkir." Whenever you're requesting, you're also mentioning. Hahulav Saka says, no, that's at the end. You have to stop at the same time mentioning and requesting, but it's quite reasonable to start mentioning before you request. That's what you would think. You'd think so, but I'm Rabbi Yochanan said, "Hidchal lahazkir matchil lishol." When you start mentioning, you start requesting. Start lishol, posik lahazkir. When you start mentioning, you stop requesting as well. So we now have on record Rabbi Yochanan saying, when you start Mashiach Haruah, you start with Tendel Mata. So now we've got that contradiction again between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, and we try to resolve it by saying, well, they're two different people. The Gemara is uncomfortable with that because they're in a chain of transmission, and we're trying to keep tradition and transmission together, even though for Rabbi Yehuda we were forced into a position where we couldn't. But Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, and what the Gemara is doing here is stressing that even though we had to resolve our previous contradiction by saying there are two views in Rabbi Yehuda, don't for a moment start thinking that tradition is not important, because even between two different people who happen to be in the same line of transmission, we're going to go to the nth degree to tie them together and say there's no contradiction. So we've had two possibilities so far. They're different people. The Gemara is uncomfortable with that. Maybe there are two dates, because one's about asking, one's about mentioning. And then we've got Rabbi Yochanan on record saying you can't start separately, they start together. So third option, Elalo Kasha, Nova Mahalan Vahalahu. He's saying two different views. One is for them and one is for us. And who is the us and them in the ancient world, in the Jewish? Babylonia and Israel. The Jews of Babel and the Jews of Israel, they operate differently. In Babel, we start asking later than in Israel. In Israel, you're right, they start, as according to our Mishnah, on the last day of Sukkot, but we don't start until Marech Eshvan. Why in Babel would you start later? Mishna, what's the difference? Lididan ditlan peri bedavra. We've got our fruit out in the field. Israel isn't quite agriculturally on the same calendar. In Babel, we don't start asking for rain while we still got to collect in our wheat and stuff. It's going to ruin everything. It's going to be difficult for us to get it. So the Gemara responds, Lididhunami. They've also got reasons not to ask for rain. This is what Jerry mentioned the first week. Israel Oliradalim. They've got people coming back from Sukkot. They all went on their pilgrimage. And if we all start requesting for rain, all the people who came from Eilat are going to be like, hey guys, we've got to get home. Why are you asking for terrible weather? So they've also got a reason to delay. So both places should really delay. Kikam Rabbi Yochanan, when Rabbi Yochanan said in Israel, they start asking earlier, Bizman Shein Ben Amigash Kaim, that's when there are no pilgrims because there's no temple. So Gemara said, well, hold on a minute. If you're trying to resolve this whole issue, let's make it as least complicated as possible. You're familiar with Occam's razor? He was a great shaver. Occam's razor is a philosophical contention that the best answer is always the one with the least assumptions. And in fact, that is, philosophically speaking, the best proof for God. Which is, it involves the least assumption to do with science and creation and the cosmos, just saying, well, there's a God, and that's actually the strongest philosophical argument for God, that it's the easiest answer to everything. But either way, the Gemara is now manifesting that principle in the context of resolving this contradiction. Now that you've said, oh, maybe one of his statements is talking about when there's no Beit HaMikdash, let's say they're both talking about Israel, and there's no contradiction. When we have the first contention of Rabbi Yochanan, that we start saying Mashiach Haruach on the last day of Sukkot, that's talking about when there's no Beit Mikdash. There are no regalim, there are no ole regalim, there are no pilgrims. When he says you start saying it later, that's talking about when there was a Beit Mikdash and people were coming home, which is not our current practice. We say Sheila later, which we'll get to in the next Mishnah. But Kam is much of it. Full stop. Next question we'll get to next time, which is the question of what about in Chutz La'aretz? In Chutz La'aretz, we've got 2 days Yom Tov. So if you really should be the last day of Yom Tov that you start saying Mashiach Haruach HaGeshem, so should we start saying it on the seventh day and then stop for Mincha and then start saying it again at Musaf the next day and do Tefillah Geshem twice or not? We'll come to that next week and then we'll get to the next Mishnah. I thank you for your time. I